So last night we teamed up with RTE's Primetime programme in Dublin for a joint show discussing key issues facing people on both sides of the border. It was a jointly commissioned survey which was part of the programme. It looked at a whole series of issues including views on constitutional options for Northern Ireland. Only 13% of respondents in Northern Ireland wanted to see a united Ireland in the short to medium term. Also in Northern Ireland, 38% of Catholics surveyed gave devolution as their preferred constitutional status in the short to medium term, compared to 27% in favour of a united Ireland. Let's speak to Malachy O'Docherty, Alex Kane and Danny Morrison, who are with me this morning. Malachy, morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Good morning. Danny Morrison, morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning, and Alex Kane. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, Stephen.
Let's just hear once again, and then we'll get your reaction to this, what the Fine Gael minister, Jimmy Dinahan, the part of the minister in government in the South, what he said about whether they can afford a united Ireland.
Can I ask Jimmy Dinahan a question from Fine Gael? Is it the position of the Irish government that it can afford a united Ireland at this moment in time in the current economic climate? Yes or no?
Well, no, really.
Alex Kane, what do we read into that?
I think it was a moment of almost unexpected reality. I mean, it's been known for a very long time, Stephen. I've been down in Dublin many occasions talking to political parties, people in government, and discussed this very issue. And there's been an acknowledgement that if there's ever going to be a united Ireland, you know, even though the polls had said last night that a majority of people on both sides of the border would like it sooner rather than later, there's a huge debate to be had on how it's funded, because I've heard people down south, I've heard Sinn Féin say that the British government should take on part of the financial responsibility for decades, you know, to in some way like a form of war reparations. I've other people said about, well, actually, if you do join two economies together, there's no guarantee. And people say, oh, well, if you make one health service, one transport service, one tourism, you have to bear in mind as well that brings job losses in its own right. How do you make up for the subvention? I don't think that Jimmy was saying, look, I'm against United Ireland. There's no sign of that. I think he was just...
Well, he wasn't, but he was saying they can't afford it.
That's what
so
I'm
what's
saying,
the point
I think
of the Sinn Féin project?
Yeah, but I think it's a very...
And a Sinn Féin project up here, obviously, and projects elsewhere from other political parties, Danny Morrison.
Yes, well, first of all, I welcome the debate. It wasn't unexpected to me that Jimmy Dean from Fine Gael would say, no, not really, it's a fact. It's just a fact of real life. And I also... To hear Arlene Foster seem to revel in the fact that the Northern State is a failed entity, you know, and smiling when she says, yes, we get $10 billion handout from Britain. I mean, the facts of the matter are that there's a huge...
She doesn't see the Northern State, as you describe it, as a failed entity for a start.
Well, first of all, I speak for myself. I'm talking about, she seemed to revel, let me repeat, she seemed to revel, and I thought this pathetic, she seemed to revel in the fact that the Northern State is a failed financial entity, dependent upon $10 billion handout from Britain. Year, I would not be proud of that fact. But that is reality, because that is what we've been reduced to. I also thought that you were fairly ill-behaved on the programme last night. You asked particular, not just the Sinn Féin speaker in Dublin, but you asked people for their opinion. And before the words were out of their mouth, you were given your opinion. And I thought that was right. You know, you said something to Piers Docherty. No, sell me United Ireland in a minute. Well, you know, Stephen, you've had 95 years to sell me, and you haven't sold me a partition of state yet.
Malachy?
Well, I think the figures are pretty fascinating in some ways, so maybe not entirely, surprising. But, I mean, what this shows is that fundamentally the big issue between the two communities here in Northern Ireland is not about the border. Other research and it shows that fundamentally the big division is not about religion either. And that leaves you with the question of, well, what is it about? And what it is about essentially is basically some kind of tribal division. We have our politics built on community division. The DUP doesn't have to worry about the border. Therefore, it doesn't need to construct it. It doesn't even need to call itself unionist. I mean, what it essentially is a political party which represents well, you can't even call the Protestant community anymore because people aren't Protestant or Catholic anymore. And Sinn Féin is essentially a party which represents a working-class Catholic community, which can neither be called working-class nor Catholic anymore. I mean, it is actually an indication of the obsolescence of the politics we have. And for us to have constructed our entire modern democracy around this question, when the question itself has gone into abeyance and hopefully will stay there, you know, it's a fundamental mistake. We should not have done that, and it's not going to work. And, I mean, what you challenged Arlene quite well, I thought, on a fairly smart point, and that is, why? What is the point in having a unionism constructed around Protestantism and cutting out all those former Catholics who are perfectly content with the border? I mean, that's madness. That's political insanity. It's cutting off your own prospects of growth as a political movement. And similarly, Sinn Féin, I mean, to present itself as representing the demand for United Ireland, when by these statistics there are people voting for Sinn Féin, and I don't know how many, but there's certainly some, and perhaps even members of Sinn Féin, who don't particularly want a United Ireland. So what are they in Sinn Féin for? And what are people in the DUP for? They're there because these are the parties that have a prospect of a share of power, and they represent tribes. And that's an indictment of the kind of politics we have.
Danny?
That it should be constructed on such a basis.
Well, you see, again, we're using the old terms here, United Ireland. I mean, it depends on... first of all, I don't believe that Britain has any right to be here, and I think they've been a disaster historically for our country. What I want to see is a new Ireland, an Ireland that's shared, an Ireland that's agreed, an Ireland that's negotiated, an Ireland that is prosperous. And so, therefore, there's a huge onus on Republicans, on Sinn Féin, to make the case that a United Ireland, however it is configured, be it the Northern Assembly and the Southern Assembly, increasingly moving on joint moves together, harmonising the economy. Republicans have to prove that makes social, economic and political sense.
And when you listened to Piers Dougherty last night, Danny Morrison, and he was saying, look, we need to have that debate, we need to communicate with people about what the short and medium term is. You know, you heard what I said to him. That's what Sinn Féin are supposed to have been doing every day of the week, and presumably have been trying to do every day of the week for many, many years, for decades. Why is the message not get through if you look at these statistics and read into them at all?
Well, first of all, we had a conflict here for 30 years, and the point we reached after negotiation was that we have a power sharing executive in the north with cross-border and all Ireland body links. Now, obviously, the unionists are resisting that. But most niceness, in my opinion, see what is happening now as a staging post. See it as being interim. See that they have to convince unionists about the merits of going beyond what we have at the moment. And that is the discussion that I, as a Republican, I welcome.
So if you were sitting, Danny, as a Sinn Féin strategist this morning, and you look, and look, this is just one survey. So let's labour that point. It is one survey, right? But it's statistically robust. If you look at this, and people are asked for their preferred constitutional status of Northern Ireland in the short to medium term, and if only 27% of Catholics are saying a United Ireland, what would you be saying to yourself if you were sitting coordinating strategy for Sinn Féin? 27%, not 40%, not 50% of Catholic, 27%.
But if you put a different question to them, would you support United Ireland if it was demonstrated that it made social, economic and political sense? That number would jump. So people obviously are being pragmatic and realistic at the current situation. And I don't see nothing wrong with that.
Alex Kim, what would convince you?
Nothing would convince me. And in fairness, I mean, Danny and I have had this conversation. In fact, I was at a Sinn Féin organised conference last week about the whole reunification project. And in fairness to Sinn Féin, Stephen, they have for the past 2 or 3 years, they've called it the Reach Out Programme, the Reconciliation Programme, the Uncomfortable Conversations Programme. They have been having this conversation. But as I said last week, there is nothing. There is nothing that Danny or any other Republican could say to me, whether it was on economic, socio-economic affairs or anything, which would convince me to swap my unionism. And there's always going to be that hardcore on both sides. It was indicated in your poll that even if there was more tax or whatever, there would be still 31%. There would be still a hardcore vote which was always going to vote one way or the other. I think the difficulty, one thing that your poll did show, which I thought was really interesting, that people on both sides of the border, and just if we keep it in Northern Ireland,
Protestants, Roman Catholics, atheists, whatever you want to call them, on issues and the big social issues like abortion, like same-sex marriage, there is an increased unanimity. They are clearly far more liberal. And I get the sense as well, Stephen, just from the stuff I do across Northern Ireland, the vast majority of people actually just want to get on with life. They want to get on with moving ahead. The difficulty is, and Danny will know this as well, because Sinn Féin, well, it's their part of their ambition. They will always want a united Ireland. There'll always be an aspect of unionism which is fearful, which instead of looking at that poll and saying, look, for the next 30, 40, 50 years, whatever it is, we're reasonably comfortable. Let's reach out. Let's actually create a Northern Ireland in which even more people would feel comfortable. But both sides are still an element that, but you saw it with Arlene Foster last night, there's still an element of both sides where they're promoting entirely contradictory things. The message of that poll, Stephen, should be, at this stage, most people can leave the United Ireland. They can aspire to it, they can dream of it, whatever. It's not the top of the priority. What politicians on both sides, Republicans, Sinn Féin, Unionists, whatever they're calling themselves, need to concentrate on is how you actually make politics reasonably normal on this side. We have a good relationship with Dublin. We have a good relationship with London. Let's bank that, but actually look at the relationship we have with each other and see what we can do to make it better.
Here's Andrew Lisburn. Morning, Andrew. Hello, Andrew. Andrew's gone. John in Belfast. Morning, John.
Well, Stephen.
Go on, John.
Stephen, I come at this from totally economics, saying this is what it's supposed to be about. It's not about religion. It's not about politics. Have you ever heard of a country called Germany?
Keep going, John.
Well, I'm referring to whenever East Germany became part of the West Germany, cynics like yourself and all these British economists says it would be the end of Germany, that Germany would be an absolute disaster. I'd like to tell you, Germany's the strongest economy in Europe.
John, thank you. There's another John here. Morning, John.
Good morning, Stephen.
Go ahead.
Stephen, you had a poll there north and south of the border. I think the poll should have happened in England, Scotland and Wales, because I believe that it would have said get out of that place and get out of there quickly. That's the first thing I would like to say. The second thing I would like to say is that for to get Ireland to unite it, I think there's two things that need to happen. And would be that if the Republic were to rejoin the British Commonwealth and if the Republic were to drop its neutrality, I believe that the Western powers would jump at the idea and you'd be dead there within 5 years, I believe.
John, thank you. When we were listening there, Alex Kane, to your contribution this morning, I guess I should really say that the people like you have failed to convince Danny Morrison. We were talking about what Sinn Féin have failed to do. People like you and unionist parties have failed to convince Danny Morrison about the benefits of a union, of the union.
Absolutely, Stephen. And you will know, I've had the conversation with you many times, Danny will know, I've written about it in newspapers for years. It's one of the real failures of unionism, in that a country, yes, and I accept we both are there competing identities and so on. It goes right back to 1921. We should have reached out the hand of friendship. When you have a 70% majority in your country backing a cause, that's the time to show magnanimity. That's the time to actually say, OK, how can we make it better? But there's something about unionism. It's in their psyche. They are constant fearful. They fall out with each other all the time. See, just look at the divisions within unionism going back 50, 70 years. Even now, even in this assembly, since 1998, off the top of my head, I think we're about five new separate wings of unionism have formed. They have this constant fear that something terribly bad is going to happen. And instead of saying to people, look, this is why the union is good, these are the benefits, cultural, historical, economic, social, we don't. We actually become terribly navel-gazing, terribly insular. And I tweeted last night after that programme, and people like Geoffrey Donaldson even retweeted it. I said, look, at this point, the union seems fairly secure. Unionism needs to relax and concentrate on the issues that really matter to people.
Let me do with you, Alex, what I did last night with some others. Sell the union.
Well, see, I can't sell the union to a Republican the same way a Republican can't sell a united Ireland to me. All I can say is that in my experience, in my personal experience, Stephen, as a citizen of the United Kingdom, and I know there have been difficulties in that time, but no one has ever offered me a genuine, better, credible...
But what does it say that what you believe in, you can't sell? You can't sell the union to people? You can't think of the top three benefits to our lives of remaining part of the United Kingdom?
The top three benefits, yes, there's an economic benefit, as was pointed out last night, that we're a part of an economy of 60 million people. Yes, we have democratic values here that didn't exist in the southern state 20, 30 years ago, even though they have changed now. And in terms of my personal protection, in terms of a state looking after my interests, whether it's in tax, whether it's in employment, whether it's in pension rights or the NHS, I have absolutely no difficulty with that. That's brilliant, Stephen. I think we have. You'll know recently, I am tremendously proud of the National Health Service. I'm tremendously proud of what the United Kingdom has done in terms of democracy in the four states. I'm tremendously proud of the fact that we hold four separate countries together. Have we made mistakes in how we promote? Of course we have. I think
can I come in here?
Well, Malachi,
of course you can. Yes,
is your unionism dependent on the National Health Service?
No, it's not.
I mean, if the Tories were to erode the National Health Service,
they're not going to, but it's not dependent on it, Malachi.
10 years.
No, it's not. It's not. I'm simply saying there's no point saying what are the values of the United Kingdom. And I mentioned one of them, the National Health Service. You say, well, if that disappeared, would you still believe it? It hasn't disappeared. It's not going to disappear. Yes, it's under challenge. It's not going to disappear. But if you send the basic, simple question for me, Malachi, you're saying to me, as someone who was born 13th of August 1955, as a citizen of the United Kingdom, is there anything that makes me feel I would rather swap my citizenship for some other citizenship? Then I have to say, no, I haven't seen that. Am I prepared to listen to the argument? Of course I am. That's why I go, Danny will tell you, you will know this. That's why I go to these conferences. I listen to the argument.
Okay.
I make my
go
own
on, Malachi.
Arguments.
I think there's two different kinds of citizenship in Northern Ireland, and I do think if you're a unionist, you have a kind of a patriotic attachment to the Union and to Britain. I think those of us who are Irish in Northern Ireland don't have a patriotic attachment to Northern Ireland. I mean, ours is more like a social contract citizenship. If we get a good deal out of it, we'll stay. But the actual good deal might not be there forever. With Britain threatening to withdraw from the European Union, in those circumstances, I think I would rather be part of a united Ireland. If the Tories are going to be in power for the next 10 or 15 years, I believe they will run down the NHS, and we might reach a time when you'd be better off in the Irish Republic. Citizenship of the Irish in Northern Ireland has always, the people we call the Catholics or the Nationalists, has always been a kind of a conditional citizenship. And while the conditions are reasonably good as they are at present, then you get results like you get in the current poll.
And is Alex Kane, the price of the union, more and more cuts from Cameron and his government?
That'll cost you the union.
I don't think that's the price of the union. I think it's the consequence of the state we now live in, Stephen. And it's bigger than that. I accept all this. Malachy's right. Danny's right. There are huge economic issues here. And I know that. We've seen in the poll that if economic conditions one way or the other were better, that would influence some people's votes. The biggest question for me, and it's always been, it's my identity. It's how I see myself. And at this
exactly,
stage,
exactly.
the past 60 years,
me,
I have seen myself. Yeah, no, it's not about unionism per se. I see myself as a citizen. It's where I was born. I feel no particular urge or need to change my citizenship. I'm not saying the 20, 30 years, well, it's been too late, I'll pop my socks for them. But in terms of my girls, it's possible. They will look at that situation. They will look at the relationships between Sinn Féin and the unionists. They will look at how Northern Ireland stands, how ordinary people, and maybe they would say, look, their generation from both sides will say, we can make a different country. We can make that will be their task, Danny. If that's what they want to do, I'm not going to get in the way. I'm just simply saying, as I see it, as I've lived my life, as I have experienced my life, I'm, put it bluntly, I'm happy as a citizen of the United Kingdom. I feel no particular need to change.
Here's William in Belfast. Morning, William.
Morning, Steve.
Go ahead.
One big thing the two parts of this island have is when the violent men die, when they die, there's a chance for everybody to start talking more rationally about things. There's too much memory of what people done who lead certain parties. When they die off, they fell off the cliff.
Some of those men you're talking about are men that are spending
I don't care.
Every day of the week working
care.
For peace, are they not?
I don't care what they're doing at the moment. We want
surely
the younger generation coming forward. People who are never involved in these things that make it easier to reconcile things.
But is it not the people who were? Is it not the people, William, who maybe were in the past involved in these things, as you describe it, who have the experience and the connections to stop a next generation doing what they did?
They all show what they've done. Well, there's blowing up people, burning people, shooting people. It's all there. Now, I see Sinn Féin have the softer females with them. That helps. But the leadership would be better going away. And if there's people in the unionist side similar, go away out of the road and let the younger people. I know my grandchildren, I know my children, they don't know what, about Le Mans hotels and so forth. They want to turn around and reconcile.
Let me let Danny Morrison respond to you, William.
Well, I don't accept that theory that people have to die off before we have peace. I mean, the people who were responsible at the time of partition and who were the first unionist government and who presided over pogroms, serious pogroms in which hundreds of people were killed, I mean, Craig Carson, Rookborough, Michael Collins in the south from the IRA point of view, when all of those people died off, we still had no reconciliation.
Danny, you know in your heart that the ones who've done the most of the killing here need to get off the stage completely, away from the stage, and give the option to the younger people to reconcile this country, reconcile it and see where it goes. And eventually, it's nice to see the president over at Windsor Park. It's nice to see Queen Elizabeth II in Dublin. Now, certain people, their experience just it can make your stomach turn to see someone in power, knowing where they came from. That is fact. That is truth. And some of it is perception, but a lot of it is reality. Get off the stage. Get the younger ones there. Never had an Armalite in their hand or a bomb.
You can't decide who people vote for. Some of these people.
I don't care what the
Sorry, go on, Danny.
Well, William, the days of discrimination are over. And everybody is entitled to run for election. And if they're voted in, they have a mandate, regardless of how much certain people have been elected. On the unionist side, Mike Stick and Mike Craw, that is the fact. Now, I do want to see united Ireland, but until that occurs, I want to see a better Ireland. I want to see a better North. I want to see peace between former enemies. I want to
see. I do think, Danny, that there is a prospect that the IRA damaged the chances of a united Ireland. That when you see so few within the Northern Ireland Catholic Irish community saying they want a united Ireland, a lot of the others are thinking, I don't want to be associated with the Provost. I don't like this constant recitation of what a wonderful freedom struggle it was, you know, and how it had to happen and stuff. A lot of people in the Catholic community are just keeping their distance from you and from the Provost. And they might be more inclined to think about a united Ireland and to enter into that discussion with the unionists. But they don't want to be associated with what happened because they actually don't believe that it was worth it.
I don't know how you square that up with the fact that Sinn Féin has displaced the SDLP and the cross...
No, you're right. You have a good point there. But, I mean, the reality is that, I mean, Sinn Féin will keep on reciting, you know, the legacy of the past as if it was a good thing, as if it was a necessary thing and a worthwhile thing. It appears you haven't even persuaded all of Sinn Féin to support you and I, Darren, but certainly there are a lot of people who will never have anything to do with you because of the blood in your hands.
Well, try and erase the past from those relatives whose loved ones were killed as a result of the British state colluding with loyalists, arming loyalists, providing them with intelligence, providing them
including the IRA as well.
We know probably 99% of what the IRA did. We don't know 99% of what the British state did.
The British state gave us the De Silva report, which is far, far more detailed about the inner workings of special branch and intelligence and the agents than anything the IRA has given us. The IRA has not disclosed its history. People who are very, very senior in the IRA deny that they were even members.
And when you're talking, about blood in people's hands, you're talking collectively and you're not talking about any individual here this morning.
Metaphorically, if you like.
Let me bring in James in Belfast. Morning, James.
Hi, Nolan. I just wanted to make a comment on the programme last night. I think there was a very vital side of the poll that wasn't displayed in relation to England, Scotland and Wales. Now, I do believe that if there was a poll asking the question whether Northern Ireland, whether they would like to still remain part of the UK, that the vast majority would say no. And I would also think that David Cameron wouldn't be running over here to Northern Ireland and knocking on people's door to beg them to stay a part of the UK like he did Scotland.
James, thank you. Ben Laurie, Deputy Editor of the newsletter. Good morning to you, Ben.
Morning.
What did you take out of last night?
The key thing that I took out of last night was the very big failure of Orange and Green on issues like same-sex marriage, on issues like abortion. This is not where people divide at all. And it didn't surprise me at all last night. In fact, a number of things. First of all, Ulster Protestants are not as conservative and reactionary as everybody says. It probably is the most small-c conservative demographic in the British Isles. But it's not that different, because a lot of these are issues that have just swept the Western world. I mean, same-sex marriage is an issue that I've never seen a change like this in my lifetime, and I didn't really believe it until I started looking at statistics of what the Americans believe. And the most conservative demographic in America is something like over 70s, white church going over 70s, and they are 19% in favor of same-sex marriage. In other words, the most anti-gay marriage group in the U.S., a fifth of them support it. And the most anti-state in the U.S. is Mississippi, 33% support gay marriage. So this is a trend like this, which even in Brazil and very Catholic countries in South America has happened, it hasn't happened in Muslim countries, is not going to be immune to Protestants in Northern Ireland. And yet we have the situation that DUP have been, and they know they've been very badly caught in this, by the way. It's quite understandable that they all vote against same-sex marriage, given their recent heritage, Christian heritage. They're very frightened of alienating that. But now they are disastrously unrepresentative of what's happening. And probably most of their DUP voters are still anti-same-sex marriage. But even then, it's not that split. And but also, not just the DUP, the SDLP, probably of the parties, most doesn't represent what it thinks, because there's still a very large minority, I would say 40%, a third at least, of Catholics who are strongly opposed. We have a letter, I think, is it to the in today's paper from, or yesterday's paper from somebody who said that they were a Catholic, and they said that they now supported the DUP. So this is just not reflecting what's going on in this island. So that's what I took from last night most.
Ben, thank you very much. Alex Kane, Malachy O'Doherty, Danny Morrison, thank you.